Hi everyone, welcome to the newest episode of Triple S, that's the Skeet Shooter Society. Happy New Year, and we're gonna kick it off by talking about practice, which hopefully you're not doing in this freezing cold weather.
Yeah, happy new year, everyone. Now that we are finished with all the stations in the Skeet Field, we're going to be covering a topic we received a request for, but it's just too big to fit into one of our earlier Q&A podcasts. We're going to talk about practice, and it's more than us saying, well, just go out and shoot 100 shells a week. We really want to go much deeper because there's far more to be said.
Yeah, and everyone is going to practice differently. So take what we say here. We're going to say a lot of different things. Take some of it, try it, see what you like, see what you don't like. We were just talking about this a second ago. See what you have the balance of time and energy for, and see what works for you.
Yeah, what she's referring to is right before we do these podcasts, we do a prep call. Sometimes they're not so quick, but we mentioned the concept of time, energy, and money. So when I was younger, when I'm about to be 30 in a couple months, but when I was in my teens, I had a lot more time. I still had the energy, I still do now, but I didn't have as much money. Whereas now, 29 going on 30. I still have energy for this sport and things have changed. I can afford a lot more now, but I don't have as much time. So very few people have all three.
And so that will tie into your practice. You know, what can you afford? What do you have the energy for? And what do you have the time for without cutting into everything else? Because skeet isn't everything. You know, you've got your job, you've got your family, you've got other hobbies. So you got to make time for it all.
Yeah, when I see the high volume shooters, they're doing 10, 15, 20,000 targets a year. I'm just amazed. I'm like,
Yeah.
what else are you doing? That's incredible. I wish I could do a lot more than what I'm doing, but their round counts, even the lower guys that are doing 10,000 registered targets a year that are at the bottom of the list, that's more than I do practice and tournaments in a heavy year.
Yeah, I think that those people don't practice. I think they just go from tournament to tournament.
All right, so if you're going out, say, once a week on the same day, around the same time, to the same range, shooting on one of the same few fields with the same guys, I think you're limiting yourself, especially if you're always shooting regular rounds. So I'm sure they will ask their friend to give them a few extra birds if they're missing a target on a certain station. But outside of that, they're pretty much always shooting regular rounds the same way, and that needs to change for a lot of guys.
We got to mix it up. So, if you're getting ready to shoot tournaments, you know, you're not going to be on the same field. Chances are the whole tournament, unless it's a really tiny club. And you're going to have a different perception. You're going to have that different background. You're going to be shooting at different times. So, the lighting conditions are going to be different. You're not going to have control. You're not going to say, oh, it's too cold. Oh, it's too windy. Oh, it's too cloudy. You're going to have to shoot at the set time, whether you know, it's cloudy or raining or windy. And you're going to have to deal with all those different conditions. You're going to have to adjust to different machines, different things on the field. So when you practice, set yourself up for success in those tournaments by, you know, shooting at different times a day, shooting on different fields, shooting with different people, even. That can help you really get ready for tournaments.
Yeah, and the next thing I'll add is I'll ask them, what is practice to you? Is this just a regular shooting outing? Is it a remedial session after a competition? If you're not shooting all regular rounds of skeet, are you practicing to improve on a specific target that you're consistently missing? Or are you tweaking a target that isn't a problem that you rarely miss, but it could be better? You feel like there's more to be had there.
Yeah, and that's all good. So you need to practice all different kind of stuff. You need to do station work, regular rounds, doubles. Doubles are my favorite. But I'm just gonna say something before we get into this too far. When you are practicing, as I've done it myself, if you're doing station work, make sure you don't shoot the same target over and over and over again for two reasons. The number one, and this is the big thing here. The biggest issue that I see is people will develop a bad habit of stopping the gun if they're shooting. Say you're shooting high three, you'll set up, call pull, shoot the first one, immediately stop the gun and swing back. And that's just a bad habit. You want to not reinforce that by shooting high three or whatever it is over and over and over again. And then the other thing is you're going to get discouraged and then you're going to start missing other targets just because you won't have the confidence. So when we say station work, we don't mean shoot a box of, my example was high three. We don't mean shoot a box of high three and nothing else. We mean practice intentionally on a specific station just for a little bit.
Yeah, so I was having this was over 10 years ago, but I was having a private lesson with a high level shooter who people will know, and he was talking about he's helping out a friend shoot a pair on four, and when they went to the practice field before that guy had a shoot off, he stopped him from going to four. He's like, "What are you doing?" It's like, "Go shoot the pair on three." It's like, "What do you mean? Why?" You're not going to start the shoot off on four. You have to break the pair on three before you can even get to four. So if you're going to shoot a whole round of competition doubles, you start on one, then you break the two, pair on two, then you get to break the pair on three. So you definitely need quantity, but there has to be some quality behind it. You actually have to break the targets that come before it in that round.
Yeah, our quality is way more important than quantity.
Yeah. So going back to what I said earlier, if you're practicing bees, you can't break a certain target or a certain pair. You're probably going to be experimenting with different foot positions, different hole points, look points. You should only adjust one of these one at a time in small increments to find out the combination of what works better so you can reliably break a target at an acceptable break point that you can pull off every single time. A good example of working on a target that you aren't missing that much, but you need to improve on because something doesn't feel right. You don't feel as confident. The move doesn't feel as well. It's not as consistent when you go to shoot a pair. Is you are adjusting because of a rare and occasional loss. Maybe you break a target. You miss a target only once or twice in an entire tournament round. There, you're fine-tuning a setup. We're talking about really small changes that many casual shooters won't even think about doing because they almost always break it. So they don't even worry about it. It's like, "Oh, well, I almost always break this. Why change it?" But it's these fine details where the top competitors differ from everywhere else. These can be where your eyes or gun is set so you can pick up that target better just by a foot or a few inches, so you don't feel as rushed. So you have a less erratic and you have a far better controlled move. It's just those small qualitative improvements that you're really fine-tuning your setup on.
And when you're doing that, I like what he was talking about with if you're, hitting it most of the time. There are some instances where people will miss a target and then completely freak out.
Yeah.
If you're hitting a target most every time, like literally you feel confident in that target, and then there's a crazy, say it's high one, and it comes out and it lands at the center stake, don't adjust for that. That's not going to happen every time. Sometimes you're just going to miss because of something crazy like that. I just learned to accept those. And what we're talking about is the shot feels okay, but it doesn't feel great. It doesn't feel like you're in control of the target. It doesn't feel perfect. You want your shots to feel nice, perfect, smooth, like you're in control of your shooting.
Yeah. And what we're talking about now, this aspect of practice, it's going to be far more difficult. And I think it will resonate far better with our listeners because most moderate to advanced level ski shooters, they can step on a field. And if they did have to shoot the same target, say 10 times, I'm confident that just about all of them would break it 8 or 9 times. But how many of them would break all 10 on command? What about shooting a whole box on that one target? if there is a small deficiency in their game that that can result in you missing two or three out of a 400, 500 target register tournament, that means that while how they're doing things is just as good, it's fine. There is something that can be adjusted and probably should be adjusted. It's finding it that can be really hard, especially since if you change the wrong thing, you can make your setup worse.
And we have kind of two different approaches to shooting here. So this is going to be a really interesting discussion. I like where this is going. I shoot by feel. So if something doesn't feel right to me, it doesn't feel perfect, doesn't feel in control, that's when I know, hey, something has to change on this specific target. It's not right. It doesn't feel right. I don't know how some people are extremely mechanical and they need that kind of robotic step. I have a student like that. They'll be very go through their checklist, and it's that checklist that they have to perfect and then kind of tweak something in there and then apply it. And if it doesn't feel mechanical to them, like something that they can repeat over and over, that's when you would need to change it.
So feel versus mechanical. I haven't, I understand what you're trying to get across, but I don't think I've heard it talked about that much.
Yeah, I call them the little robots. You see people, they're very robotic. They do the exact same thing every time. It doesn't matter if it's crazy wind, they're not going to move their whole point. And I'm like, if it's crazy wind and it's blowing my gun, I'm going to let it blow my gun because, well, it's going to be blowing the target if it's blowing my gun.
Yeah, if, like, say, let's have an example here. High two. If that wind is just knocking that target down, the gun's got to come down. So too must your eyes. There is no
Yes.
way around. If you don't, you're not going to pick it up and you're definitely not going to break it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Before we go any further, I'm sure many will think, of course, you got to work hard, but how many do? How many will shoot a full register shoot, keep track of all their lost targets, go back, think about those shots, and really ponder if something could have been improved, how they approached it? Are they going to write things down to try some small adjustments to experiment with, especially if they only dropped one or two of that target across the whole 4 or 5 gun shoot? The question I'm asking is, are you obsessed enough with constant improvement to think about these things, write them down, and spend your practice shells working on them instead of going out and shooting regular rounds with a group of three or four friends just for fun?
Yeah, I don't know many people who actually sit down and analyze their shooting for the right reasons. I know a lot of people who analyze them and then let this reflect on their shooting and the rest of the shoot, but not many who will sit down and say, how can I improve this? And that is very important.
Yeah, I know plenty of people will think, oh, if I had just not missed this target, I would have had that score. That's not what we're referring to. I'm talking about at the end of the day is like, say, hey, I shot the 12 and 28 gauge at the zone shoot, and I missed these three targets in the 12. I missed these two, three, four targets in the 28. Keep track of them. It's like, okay, what were the mistakes I made? Okay, is there something wrong with what I did, or did I just neglect to execute? Does there need to be a change? Okay, what would those changes be? Should I write them down? Hey, next practice session, try this. That's what we're talking about, not saying, oh, darn, I missed. If I hadn't missed a high seven on the last round, I would have ran it. There's a difference.
Yeah. And it's also something that you might consider doing after the whole shoot is over
Yeah.
for two reasons. One, you don't want to be sitting there thinking, oh man, well, I'm behind on a high three out of four times. I need to do something about it. And then every time you step on, you're going to be thinking about that high three. And it's also not something you want to do in the middle of a tournament because if you do make a change, you want to have time to practice it. You don't want to make a change in the middle of a tournament. It's not a good practice.
Yeah, there is a bit of a mental aspect behind what she just said. Going back to the target effect high three, I missed a high three. Nope. Oh.
Speak.
The best thing to say is like, it's all right. I'll get it next time. Or, oh, needs work, not, oh my goodness, I missed high three. Something's wrong with my setup. Oh darn, what am I gonna do to fix this for the rest of the tournament? It's like you've broken it plenty of times before, you'll break it again. Don't worry about it. Needs work, you'll get it next time.
Right, I missed the first half of that. Audio cut out on my end. I'm not sure what it was, but yeah.
Yeah, I just agreed with you. So going back to what we mentioned about, say, 100 shells a week, while there is a thing as too little and too much, I wouldn't hold an exact shell count so strictly. Some quantity is needed, but quality of the practice is what makes it valuable. Or you shouldn't strive to hit a certain round count. Best way to ensure this is to have a plan of what you're doing for your next practice. It doesn't need to be as stringent as I'm going to spend one box doing this. I'm going to spend 10 shells on each of these stations for the first half of the practice. It's just best to keep a record. Well, I'm sure some will have a full-size journal that they write in. An easy and effective thing to do is to get a small 3 by 5 inch notebook. The one I have costs $1 at the store and has 80 blank pages. Each page is roughly the size of 2 sticky notes. So, if you want an example, what I'm probably going to do for my first practice in the spring, sometime in April, I'll say, hey, practice your move on this target to see how well you pick it up with your eyes, see how well you transition to the second target on doubles, because I'm going to be adding a small shim into my stock. Just stuff like that, not say spend 100 shells shooting regular rounds or spend 25 shells shooting doubles.
I'm from North Carolina originally, and there was a guy there who was like, he was obsessed with he was mechanical. He was a mechanical shooter, has that process and everything. And he had a set regimen, and there were four different stages, and you had to go through each of the stages. And until you could do the first one perfectly, then, once you were able to do it, moved on to the second one. But if you couldn't do the first one perfectly, you couldn't move on to the second. And then from the second to the third to the fourth, and you had to do each one perfectly. And it's like, this guy is one, using a lot of shells. Two, that's a little crazy. I don't think we need to follow quite such a structured plan. It's more kind of, well, again, what do you feel like doing that day? A big feel kind of a person. What would I feel like? So.
Yeah, a prominent skeet shooter that I know of, he says, you haven't really learned to shoot high five unless you've taken an entire bucket. I mean, like a big contractor's bucket full of 410 shells and shot it all up on high five. That's a lot. Of course, this is back when you could actually get a lot of 410s for not much, but anyway, going back to the whole journaling thing. What you write down, it can be anything and everything. The point is, I think it should be written down because you'll forget by the next time you're at your next practice. And after the practice, it should be written down, not writing pages and pages, just a few notes. It should be the subject of how the practice went, positives, and things that can be worked on for next time. And the idea is like, try this adjustment here. It could
And
be
they
made
could be
up.
funny little notes to help you remember something if you're really forgetful. If it makes you laugh, it's probably a good note. That's my
And
rule.
it doesn't need to be as simple as say only shoot this station, work on these targets for the whole next session. But what you should be is evaluating what I mentioned earlier about the latter example of the practice, the quality of how well you saw a target, how well you moved with a target, how well it felt, whether you felt rushed, whether it took too long, how the move went, how comfortable your body's reaction was to that target. Not the black and white of I broke this many targets. I missed this many targets. You can write down your score, but there's more to it when we go to each one of these shots.
And if you are trying to do that, where you sit on this bit, like you record what you're doing, I always say shoot a warm-up box first, see how you feel, and then maybe practice some of those. Don't go to the skeet field and be like, I need to practice high five today, because then, well, you're probably going to miss a lot of high fives. If you go with the mentality of, I need to practice this, you're kind of taking yourself down already. Go see how you feel.
Yeah, like what I mentioned earlier, don't just start your session and go straight to high five. There are still four stations before it that you need to clear before you can even get to high five. And then after, you still have a lot more targets to do before you can clear that round. Because it doesn't matter whether you miss high five or low seven, missing one is missing one. You have 24 other targets in that round you have to worry about. But
And you can
anyway.
miss any of them.
Yeah, you miss any of them, man. It's these qualitative factors is something you should be recording after each session, more than just what your score was. And if you accomplish what you wrote down, what you want to work on for that practice or that training session, and if you've only shot, say, 75 shells when you'd normally bring four boxes, or if it's typical of you to bring like six boxes, which I've been doing the last couple of years. And after four or five, you feel really good. You feel accomplished. It can be a good idea to call it a day because you're not only are you saving money, saving shells, which is the first thing you're thinking of right now, but it's the more important factor is you're changing your mindset from shooting up a shell quota to actually one of I'm going to go there and I want to accomplish these goals.
He can be saved. He's not completely mechanical. This is good. But what he's saying is very true. Don't focus on a shell count. Maybe, I mean, some people, they need a little motivation. And it's like, man, if I'm left to my own devices, I won't shoot for 3 weeks. So you might set a weekly shell count. You have to shoot at least four boxes a week. And for those of you who want to improve, something like that, come up with your own. But yeah, don't focus. It's like running. Focus on quality over quantity. Don't focus on miles. It's the same thing. Don't focus on number of boxes. Focus on how well you're practicing.
Yeah. So let's talk about what we do for practice. You mentioned a little bit earlier that you like to start off with a regular round. And for the longest time, this was years and years ago, I would just shoot regular rounds with people. Well, that's wrong almost most of the time. But if I were just to do station work, I think that's also wrong because a few years ago, I used to have an issue where I would drop more than usual in the first round. Well, how I went about fixing this is when I practice, I would shoot a regular round of skeet cold, and I do it for score. Well, that helped out a lot because I'd go many practice sessions in a row where I'd always run that first round. But then something I noticed in the last couple of years, either box two or three, usually three, that's where all or most of my losses were to occur. So instead of having a whole practice session of mostly station work, I would occasionally go out there and I would shoot four boxes for score. And I put the pressure on myself and saying, hey, if you miss in box two or three, you have to stop and your next box is station work. You don't get to finish that round. You something to put pressure on you to perform for those 100 shells because that's what almost all skeet events are. It's 100 targets.
And
So,
that's a good point, putting pressure on yourself. Because if you don't put your pressure on yourself in practice, nobody else is. And you're not going to get that practice for a tournament setting.
yeah. And I wouldn't do station work before you do this because you want it to be a cold open. Because when you're entering the first round of a tournament, most of the time you aren't going to have any practice time for that. So whether it's fresh in the morning or after a long day's hard work, there has to be some starting point. So you need to be able to perform during that first round because the first box counts as much as your third or fourth for your score. So if you're going to try this for your practice, it needs to be your first box, whether it's your first one or your first four. And then after that, you can do some station work or some doubles, but there needs to be a mix. It shouldn't be the same thing all the time, every time. So, have you been doing any leagues recently?
Leagues?
Yeah.
No, they actually have one going on right now, and I thought about doing it, but I just, with the property, I'm usually there on the weekends working, so I haven't done it.
How is the house coming along?
It's good. I dug the footings, so we've put up the solar panels and we ran the septic lines, and I've dug the footings. So next we're going to start building.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I asked about leagues because I did one when I was a teenager, and of course it was winter and it's miserable out. I think that's kind of a farce for some clubs to actually get people to come out and patronize their business because it's a lot lighter during the cold months. But that's just a theory I have. I said it before, I don't shoot from November through February or March, and I just take a break. But it can be fun if you just want something lighthearted to go out and shoot with friends. But I don't think a 50 target league once a week is an efficient use of time. I worry about, okay, I gotta get there. I gotta take time out of my day. I mentioned that I usually most of my practices are five or six boxes. Well, I don't do that every week. I may do it once or twice a month, because it's the time getting there and the time getting back. I'd rather not have a regularly scheduled practices just when I can actually get out there. Another thing is instead of shooting with a whole group of four other people, I think it should just be you and one other person, or maybe two other people. Because if you're going back and forth through stations working on stuff, there are time considerations.
Yeah. Now I like to go to the gun club and shoot with all the little old guys, the ones here. But yeah, I shot now as someone who shot by themselves. So when I started shooting in North Carolina, yeah, you started and it was okay to shoot with the other guys. After a little bit, I kind of got banned from shooting with everybody else because I was better than them and the little old guys didn't want to shoot with me. So I shot by myself
Oh no.
for like, I don't know, 7 years. And every once in a while, I'd go out to Craig Kirkman's and I'd shoot with them, and they didn't mind. That was always fun. I prefer shooting with other people.
Yeah,
So for me, being by myself, I'm like, no. And there's somebody, and they'll be like, hey, you want to go over and shoot with just me? And I'm like, no. No, stay with all the old guys.
if it's just you, that's the most time efficient thing to do, but you're wearing
Yeah.
yourself out because you're not shooting a tournament by just yourself. So you're going to get a little bit more fatigued earlier. So I think it's best when you're with one or two other people. Another thing is what you alluded to earlier is not just training certain targets or certain clubs, which you absolutely should, but another thing is weather training. Most of the ski tournaments take place in the summer, so it's going to be warm out. The sun is going to be up. It's going to be shining down on the tops of the targets. But what about training when you have an overcast day, when the lighting isn't quite as light? What if it's dark out? You should go out there and shoot in those conditions. If you can, shoot under the lights because that's where many high-level tournaments will have their shoot-offs for. If it's right, I know people aren't going to like this, but you should be able to shoot in the cold, in the wind, in the rain. If you have a day that's
Yeah,
windier
in
than
case you go to
most.
Phoenix in February, that was miserable. I actually am wearing the Under Armour shirt that I had to buy when I was in Phoenix last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was freezing.
Yeah. Another thing is time of day. I mentioned going out there and being able to shoot when you're tired after a day's work, but the time of day I want to talk about now is the conditions it has on you. So if you're shooting, say, a tournament at 9 a.m. with a skeet field, the rising sun in the east will be blasting you in the face on station one. So you should practice sometimes to mimic that condition. Another thing is, when you're shooting at 9 a.m. in the start, you're going to have a shadow when you're shooting low four and low five. So be aware of that, and some of your practice sessions should be at that time. On the opposite side is most shoot-offs, they occur later in the day. They're going to be around between 3 and 5 p.m. Well, the sun at that time of day is getting ready to set in the west. So you're going to have a shadow on, say, high three. You're going to have that sun on your left side blasting you in the face there. So practice to mimic that.
Yeah. And don't just save your doubles for the end of the day. You should practice them periodically because you do shoot doubles in tournaments during the day. It's not just the nighttime thing.
Yeah. And you can practice once a week at the same time, but some guys would want to practice 2 days in a row. If they only have two practice sessions for that entire month, try shooting it 2 days in a row to mimic a tournament. As far as clothing goes, I know this time of year it's colder for most people. You're going to have more layers on that's going to affect your stock fit. The shoes, the footwear you may wear, it may differ. You may be wearing boots. Well, some boots, they don't have as well traction as, say, tennis shoes. And most boots, they lift you off. You're standing a little bit taller. Well, you also have more material between the bottom of your foot and the bottom of your footwear, so you don't have as close contact to the ground, which can affect how you move. Cold temperatures, the thing I hate the most about it is that how it affects your muscles. It can get you seize up a bit. You're not as freely moving. You're a little bit more tense.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good points there, and he knows more about the winter clothing than I do, being that he's up there in Utah
Well,
by now.
I grew up in Iowa till age 20, and I remember the Winter League when I was 16, 17, and another reason why I don't do Winter Leagues anymore, other than just want to take a break, which is the main reason, is that you don't enjoy it as much. It's more of a mentality, okay, shoot your targets, get done so we can leave. That's not
Yes,
enjoyable.
we're freezing. Yeah, no.
And
But yeah.
yeah, another thing is travel. If you travel out of state for shoots, you should shoot a box or two at that new club before you register targets, if you can, because while the targets may be to NSSA specs, they may feel different to you. You just want to get used to them. If you don't shoot as many tournaments, go to a different club in the same state, maybe an hour or two away, just to get used to different fields. It's training for anything and everything.
I always say if you've never been there before, try to get there to where you can shoot like two boxes, a box of singles and a box of doubles, because that'll get you both presentations that you're going to see during the week.